Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers Draft Edition with Zach Cohen right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to a special edition of Hardwood Handicappers, a live NBA Draft Edition of Hardwood Handicappers. I'm your host, Zachary Cohen, senior editor of VSiN.com and host of the Hardwood Handicappers podcast. We have a lot to get into with the 2026 NBA Draft, just about 60 minutes away. I won't be doing all of this alone. I will be joined by a couple of fantastic guests. We will have one, Bruce Pearl, former Tennessee and Auburn head coach, somebody that has been to the Final Four twice in his head coaching career, as well as Ryan McDonough, former Phoenix Suns general manager, somebody that has actually been in a war room on draft night and made actual decisions that matter for an NBA team. So very excited to be joined by them. But until then, we will start with this. A lot changes year over year in the NBA draft, but one thing that stays the same, it starts with the number one pick. And this year, the Washington Wizards will be selecting at number one. And it certainly looks like AJ Devonsa, the talented forward out of BYU, will be their selection. If you've looked at the odds movement over the last 24 hours, it's absolutely insane. Devonsa yesterday, right around minus 450 to be the number one player selected. But as this draft rapidly approaches, he has moved to the ballpark of minus 2,500. And it certainly looks like he will hear his name called first. And that is not a move that I think that they are going to regret. Devonsa is a highly talented forward, a good leader, a good worker, somebody that averaged 25 points per game for BYU last season and really should come in and give them a face of the franchise. But the rest of this top four, very chalky as well. And that almost makes for a boring top of the draft, but we will get into other ways to bet on this. But at number two, it will be the Utah Jazz selecting. It sounds like it's going to be Darren Peterson, the talented guard out of Kansas, but a polarizing guard out of Kansas. But this is a guy that yesterday, minus 175 to be the pick at number two. Now, as the draft rapidly approaches, minus 475. So it looks like it's going to be Devonsa one to Washington, Peterson two to Utah. Then it seems like it's going to be Cam Boozer, the national player of the year for Duke, going to the Memphis Grizzlies at number three. And number four looks like it will be Caleb Wilson, who oddly enough, minus 900 to go to the Bulls at number four. That is a very, very, you know, athletic, highly skilled player out of UNC. But it's interesting to see that his odds are almost as close as Devonsa's are to go number one, despite him being number four. But yeah, it's going to be chalky at the top of the draft. I think that it's going to end up going Devonsa, Peterson, Boozer, and then Wilson. If there's somewhere there, you know, a wrench might be thrown into that, it would be Utah at number two, where the Jazz have, you know, Cam Boozer's dad, Carlos Boozer, in their front office. And also, you know, Danny Ainge, a storied general manager, storied decision maker, somebody that has won NBA titles throughout his career, and might not want to play hardball with Darren Peterson, who has been difficult, not only in the pre-draft process, but also dating back to his entire freshman season. It will be interesting to see if Ainge decides to maybe pass on Peterson and go with Boozer, who I believe is a little bit more of a sure thing, but at the same time, doesn't fit as well for what Utah's looking for. Utah can really use a backcourt mate for Keontae George, and Peterson, with his ability to knock down shots, his ability to make plays as well, that looks like the right pick at number two if you're just kind of looking at fit. But it will be fascinating to see what happens in the top four. But realistically, in my opinion, this draft kind of starts at five, and that's where things begin to get somewhat actionable. I actually put a couple of picks over at VSiN.com on Monday with what I think is going to happen at number five. That's where the Los Angeles Clippers will be selecting in this draft. Right after that, you have the Brooklyn Nets. After that, you have the Sacramento Kings. And the expectation is that in the 5 to 7 range, you're going to see a lot of the primary ball handlers in this draft being selected. These are a lot of guys that are viewed as having very high upsides, a lot of shot-making ability, a lot of playmaking ability. It's just a matter of who's going to go where. And for months now, it was really, really difficult to read what was going to happen from 5 to 7. I believe we got some very valuable information in the last couple of days. So I have a couple of plays for you from 5 to 7 at number 5 with the Clippers, I would take Keaton Wagler to be the player that is selected by Los Angeles. We've heard that Wagler has had workouts with both the Chicago Bulls and the Los Angeles Clippers. And that to me is very important because it sure sounds like Caleb Wilson is going number 4 to Chicago. So where does Wagler go? It sounds like it's going to be Los Angeles. If he hasn't worked out with any of the teams after the Clippers, him and his team must feel very good about being the pick for LA. Otherwise, you don't want to risk throwing the teams off behind you, bothering them, and, you know, leading to a draft night slip. So I think Wagler ends up going to the Clippers at 5. This was plus money yesterday, so we were getting better odds on it if you head over to vsin.com and saw that it was a play for me. As of right now, it's a little closer to minus 200, but in my opinion, still playable, but I would search around for the best prices. I am reading you DraftKings Sportsbook odds, so that is where, you know, I'm getting them, but there might be better odds out there. But number 6, this is another really interesting one, but I do think it's going to be Mychal Brown Jr., the talented shot maker and elite pick and roll ball handler out of Louisville, who not quite as weird as Darren Peterson, but definitely had a strange season in Louisville in his freshman year. Back injury kind of ruined things. Just a strange year. They didn't get exactly what they were expecting out of him, but this is somebody that can really shoot the ball. He can really make plays for others. And there's been some kind of tidbits and nuggets that suggest that he will be the pick for Brooklyn. He has noted now multiple times that he has had at least 3 in-person meetings with the Nets decision makers. He has also spoken pretty highly of his relationship with Nets head coach Jordy Fernandez and Nets, you know, general manager decision maker Sean Marks. When you have a good relationship with people like that, it generally means good things in terms of you ending up in that location. Then number 7, kind of think this is the poorest kept secret in the entire draft. I do think the Kings are going to get their guy, and I think they're going to get Darius Acuff Jr., the electric guard out of Arkansas, someone that played for John Calipari. Calipari himself has said that this is going to be a special player in the NBA. And if anybody would know, it's John Calipari, who has coached multiple all-NBA performers in the NBA. And I do think that if he tells you someone's going to be special, you might want to listen. And it sounds like they've been very, very hot for Acuff. And it sounds like Acuff really wants to be in Sacramento. So I think that's going to be the fit that we're going to see. And also in the top 10, I'll also throw out, I like a Dame Mara to go under 9.5 when looking at his draft position. That's the first non-guard that I really feel strong about in that kind of range. But with so many guards in this draft potentially available after the lottery, give me the 7'3" rim protector that has flashed some shooting touch, has, you know, an ability to pass and make some read and react plays. I think that that's a guy we're going to see go in the first 9. And I do think that Dusty May being the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks might matter at number 9. But speaking of Dusty May, we will get into that with our next guest, Bruce Pearl. But first, I wanted to say the NBA draft can change a team and the smart money moves fast. VSiN Pro has you covered with real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop tools, and expert off-season analysis, all for as little as $9.99 for your first 30 days. Start winning the off-season today. Visit vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. And like I said, we're going to get into a lot of stuff in the NBA draft. We're going to get a lot of off-season stuff over the next couple of months. We're going to have you covered over at vsin.com with all of that. We're also going to have you covered on the Hardwood Handicappers podcast, which I am recording all throughout the summer, once or twice a week, but we'll pick back up with Monday to Friday for the show once the season starts, and you'll get all of my bets throughout the season. But I do think this is going to be a very interesting top 10, and I can't wait to hear what Coach Pearl has to say about it. This is somebody that has coached a lot of these players, coached against a lot of these players, won at the highest level. If somebody understands what it takes to be, you know, a very good player at the next level, it's Pearl, who's been selling these kids on the dream for his entire career. So really looking forward to seeing what we have there. But as far as top 10 goes, those are really the plays I have. Also really like Nate Amont, the Tennessee forward, to end up going inside the top 10. There's a lot of buzz about him potentially going to the Milwaukee Bucks, but we will see. I do think that that's going to be a situation where maybe he goes a little bit earlier. There's been buzz with Amont as early as number 6 in this draft. So whether it is 10 or 6, we would cash on an under 10.5 play. But man, it's going to get dicey. There's a lot of really talented players in this lottery, and there's a lot of over-under draft positions that are inside the top 10. I heard it on primetime last night with Tim Murray and Matt Eumanns. Only so many players can actually go in the top 10. There are going to be some fallers. If you ask me who I think is going to fall, this isn't necessarily my opinion on the player. Kind of have a feeling it might be Kingston Flemings. I just feel like the draft measurements, there are things that can actually scare off NBA front offices. And he measured in a little bit shorter than expected. And his wingspan was a little bit shorter than expected. And I think that for as good of a guard as he was defensively in college, you never quite know what's going to happen at the next level. If he's a smaller guard, teams will try to pick on him. Maybe it won't work. There are kind of situations where players are able to defend at a high level, even smaller sizes. We kind of saw that in the NBA Finals with a Jose Alvarado, and Fleming is way, way better offensively than Alvarado is. But that measurement definitely scared some people off. And with so many talented players inside that top 10 range, I kind of think that that might be the guy that you are going to see falling. But we're going to pick the brain of Bruce Pearl coming up shortly after the break. I'm going to ask him some really, I think, interesting questions. I wrote them, so remember, there is no such thing as a dumb question before I ask them. But I am excited to talk to him. Let's get to the opinions of the coach right after this.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
We're back with more Hardwood Handicappers, Draft Edition, only on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to a Hardwood Handicappers NBA Draft Edition. I'm your host, Zachary Cohen, and I want to turn now to the Progressive guest line to welcome in former head coach Bruce Pearl, who's currently doing an awesome job as an analyst for both TNT and CBS. Coach, I want to start with a question that I'm sure you're probably sick of answering, but perhaps this is the last night that you're going to have to do it. As a former coach, what did you make of the strange Darren Peterson situation in Kansas? And have you heard anything yourself about what it makes you feel better or worse about his long-term prospects?
Well, Zach, it's great to be with you. And I love the way you framed the question. I'll start with the good. Peterson won big time in high school. And when he was playing in championship games, like playing against the best, he was always the best. He had the ability to almost always be the best player on the floor. And I do look at that and of course then recognize his incredible, he's the best shot maker and a game translating to the NBA game with his length, his ability to guard multiple positions. The biggest concern I have, Zach, is the fact that, you know, he was at Kansas. He was playing for Bill Self. Bill Self's had a lot of pros. Bill Self's have coached a lot of different personalities. And let's face it, things did not work out well at Kansas. And it appeared that Peterson's conduct actually had Coach Self, it caught him by surprise a few times. So I think that unpredictability, his quietness, his social awkwardness, the fact he doesn't spend a lot of time in front of a camera, is that the franchise that you want to put a tag on somebody versus an A.J. DeBanza, who is more polished, communicates better? There's a lot of other reasons why DeBanza's size and length and so on enter into the decision-making. But part of it is a conduct and a reputation. And DeBanza wins that.
Yeah, DeBanza just seems like such a pro, whereas Peterson, you do get the question marks. And in a draft with so many talented players at the top, a little bit difficult to draft a player like that. I guess kind of spinning off that a little bit, you have met with a lot of these kids. You've coached either against them or you've coached them before. You've tried to get them there to Auburn. Who do you think ends up being the best prospect in this draft, whether that's right away, you know, immediate impact as a rookie, or down the line?
Wow, that's a tough question. Now, that I don't like the dodge questions. I'm not a dodger. But, man, I mean, I'd be giving you some of my best guesses. You know, Cameron Boozer probably goes third. And, like, he's the most productive player in the draft. He was the best college player in the draft. The questions are, how much does it translate? What's his ceiling? I think those are fair because of what the next level is going to be. But he's always been questioned at every level. You know, I think Caleb Wilson, to me, as a kid that's made the most progress over the last several years, he's always played in DeBanza, Peterson, and Boozer's shadow. The kid's had a chip on his shoulder for years. I think he's got great upside because of his length, his athleticism, his motor. He stayed humble and he stayed hungry. And so I guess if you were looking for somebody that's not going to get picked number one, that you think whose stock may really rise at some point, I'll go with Caleb Wilson.
That's a good answer. I mean, I have Boozer as the number one on my personal draft board. I think he's going to be such a good pro. Love the production he had at Duke. And Wilson is a player that the tools are just off the charts, and everything you kind of hear about his character just sounds like the type of guy you want in your locker room, especially for a team maybe like Chicago is gearing up to potentially draft him at number four. You're trying to change the culture. Getting somebody in there like that would seem to be, you know, a home run for them. But moving on, I kind of want to ask you, like, you coached in the SEC as recently as 2 years ago. So a player that you actually had to deal with, and I was looking at the box scores, he didn't absolutely torch you, but you played him twice. LeBaron Filon Jr. from Alabama is a player that I believe is very, very talented. His over under draft position for, you know, the betting fans watching this network right now is 17.5. So just outside the lottery. I'm wondering what you think about his game, what you think makes him special, and maybe what he needs to work on at the next level.
Well, he's a killer. He's an absolute killer. And he broke my heart because when LeBaron was a junior in high school, he was committed to Auburn. And that commitment didn't last that long. Nobody finished second on great players like Bruce Pearl. Nobody. I love the kid. He is a competitor. He's a winner. Another guy with a chip on his shoulder. Another guy that had to work his way up. But I tell you what, with the ball in his hands late in the game and he did bucket, he can get to that elbow. He can get to that spot. And even though he played for Nate Oates and it was all about the three ball, LeBaron could go get you a tough two or make you a defensive play. I guess consistent shooting, continue to work on his body would probably be what he needs to do. He's probably going to go right about where you called it. I think he's 17, 18. I don't think he moves ahead of the Wagglers or the Acuffs or Kingston Fleming. Certainly Peterson, Mikel Brown. Those guys probably all go before him, but he's going to be right behind them.
Yeah, it feels like a really good consolation prize if you don't have a top pick and you need a guard. There's a few of them in this draft between him, Bennett Sturts, Christian Anderson. Really, really like the guards in this draft. I think it's a really deep group. But I do kind of wonder, just like taking a wider view at the class, any prospects that you really like that maybe aren't surefire first rounders? And the one I did write down is Joshua Jefferson, somebody that you played in the Maui Invitational with Iowa State. Older player, older in terms of NBA prospects these days, not actually an older player, but somebody that I think is really interesting. But anybody else like that, or do you like Jefferson?
I like Jefferson. You know, I think he's going to be a really productive pro. He's never going to be an NBA All-Star, but he's going to be a guy that's going to play for a lot of years. That it reminds me a little bit of a former player that I coached, Tobias Harris, and a stretch four man that can guard multiple positions. And I think he's got a lot of qualities that are a winner. I think it's going to be really interesting, Zach, to see where do the three Michigan bigs go and how closely do they get drafted together. You know, Yaxel's 24. He. If you like Boozer, you probably like Axel because he's really, really productive. But obviously, they're going to worry about his age. They're going to worry about his, you know, some of the other things that maybe move him down. But Mara moves from a late second round pick a year ago. He moves in the top 10. Morez Johnson is going to be somewhere between in the top 12. So is Axel. It's going to be interesting to see. Do the three Michigan big men all get drafted between like 10 and 12 or 13? And can they go back to back to back?
Well, you're almost doing my job for me, Coach, because my next question for you was about Dusty May leaving Michigan and going to coach Dallas. And I was just kind of wondering what you think makes him a fit in the NBA, how you see him doing with Cooper Flagg and company. And do you think that he's going to be, you know, kind of posturing for Dallas to select one of those Michigan men at number 9? I think all of them would fit pretty nicely there.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Wouldn't surprise me. First of all, Dusty May's a great coach. He's an outstanding communicator. And even though he looks like the manager, and he'd be the first to admit that, he's been able to coach the greatest and the best. And he's coached some tough kids, and they love him. You can coach him as hard as you love him. I do think he loves his players. And I think that's part of the reason why he said, you know what, I just don't want to do this anymore in this age of NIL, where I win a national championship. And then on the heels of that, I got to go recruit my whole team, and there's free agency. And man, it takes a while to develop culture. And Dusty May is a culture guy. And so and this is part of the reason why I stopped coaching. Man, you can't do culture in 8 months. You just can't. He's also always wanted to be an NBA coach. This guy was born to coach. And the fact that he did start off as a manager or a NAIA practice player at Oakland City Community College or a manager at Indiana. The fact that he's grown up and done it all, man, he's definitely a guy that I'm rooting for. And I don't think this is the end of the trickle from college into the NBA. You watch next year. I bet you there are two or three of the top young coaches in the college basketball. You watch them on some NBA rosters next year.
Yeah, I feel like the names are all floating out there. There's some rumors about Todd Golden potentially going to the Warriors to succeed Steve Kerr. There are some other ones. I know John Shire was kind of the guy that was offered the Dallas job, but it will be really interesting to see kind of where this trend takes us. I know the college job has gotten a lot harder, but thank you so much for joining us, Coach. It's always a pleasure hearing from a legend like yourself. And when we come back, we'll have some more insights for all of you as we're going back to the guest line and talking to former Suns GM Ryan McDonough.
Handicappers Draft Edition, only on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're back with the Hardwood Handicappers NBA Draft Edition, and joining us now on the Progressive guest line is former GM of the Phoenix Suns, Ryan McDonough. Ryan is an analyst on SiriusXM NBA Radio Channel 86, and we've had the pleasure of having him on the Hardwood Handicappers podcast before. Ryan, how's it going?
Hey, doing great, Zach. Always good to be on with you.
Thank you. Yeah, I love having you on. And I think this is a really interesting draft to have you on, because while you were the general manager of the Phoenix Suns, you also spent years working with Danny Ainge. And I think that Ainge and the Utah Jazz kind of represent a small inflection point in the 2026 NBA draft, with Utah holding that number 2 pick. And just have a couple of questions about that. I'm wondering, in the time you spent with Danny, of all the prospects in this draft, which one do you think that he would like the most? And also, the weird situation there with, you know, the owner potentially being interested in bringing AJ DeBonsa in, how much do you think that Danny would listen to somebody like that? And do you think he has full autonomy to make that pick 100% himself?
Yeah, all good questions, Zach. I would say that, you know, Danny Ainge and Austin Ainge, whose son is helping run basketball operations now in Phoenix, is a good friend of mine. They have a unique and special relationship with Ryan Smith, the owner, that goes back a decade or more to their time at BYU and the relationship. So I do think they like AJ DeBanza, and I can see why. He's the most rock solid prospect in this draft. His floor, as we say in NBA scouting parlance, is very high. I think at a minimum, Zach could be a very good player and has a chance to be potentially a great player. So I think that certainly factors in. But I'll be honest with you, I don't see a whole lot of difference in a talent perspective between he and Darren Peterson. In fact, you could make an argument, I think, that in some aspects Peterson is more talented. So I think, let me say this. I don't think I know, Zach, that if Utah has gotten comfortable with Darren Peterson's medical, which is a big if, and if Washington picks AJ DeBanza at one, which is, I think most people anticipate they'll do, I have no question that Danny Ainge and Austin Ainge and company will not hesitate to draft Darren Peterson at two if they've gotten comfortable with the medical and they think Peterson is the most talented prospect on the board, which I believe they will.
How does that work with Carlos Boozer in the room? Does he just kind of have to stay silent, or is he really, really banging the table for his son?
It's a great question. My guess is, it's just a guess, but my guess is that Carlos will not be in the draft room. I think he'll be in Brooklyn. At least I hope he's in Brooklyn, with his son, enjoying this moment in person. We went through something a little bit similar, Zach, somewhat different, but in Boston, Doc Rivers was our head coach, and Austin Rivers, his son, was a top draft prospect coming out of Duke. So, Doc is a great guy and a straight shooter, as is Danny Ainge. So we were always honest with him. But at the same point, we're not dealing with robots, right? We're dealing with human beings, and it is difficult. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough pass if Utah passes on Cameron Boozer for somebody with questions, which Darren Peterson certainly has if he is the pick. I think we're all big boys here. Carlos has been around the NBA his whole life, and if that is the decision they make, I imagine Carlos would love to have a son with the organization he works for, but I think he'll understand and support the pick. And like I said, I think and hope he's in Utah enjoying this moment rather than worrying about who the Jazz take at number two.
Absolutely. I mean, it really can't go wrong with any of these three players at the top, in my opinion. But I do want to quickly ask you, in 2015, you had the 13th pick in the NBA draft with the Phoenix Suns, and you selected a player by the name of Devin Booker. So since then, 5 All-Star appearances, 2 All-NBA nods, trip to the NBA Finals. If I were to come to you from the future and tell you that somebody in this draft, some going 13 or later, ends up having a Booker-like career, who would it be?
Oh boy. Well, first of all, I appreciate the kind words, and sometimes you get lucky. I appreciate also not bringing up the guys we drafted in Boston or Phoenix who weren't very good. We all have some of those as well. That's a great question though, about sleepers in the draft. I do think there's a bit of a drop off, Zach, after kind of the mid to late lottery range. But since you made me pick one, I'll go, maybe not as obvious. Dalen Swain from Texas, the wing, who seems like it won't go in the top 10 and probably goes outside the lottery. Good athlete, wing, has, some two-way ability. But in that range there, if you can find somebody with relatively few holes who has, good medical clearance from your team doctors and a tremendous intellect and work ethic, I think as I evaluate the guys who have done well and outperformed their slot, Devin would be one, Donovan Mitchell in the late lottery would be another, and then even more to the extreme, what guys like Nikola Jokic and Draymond Green and recently Jalen Brunson have done as second round picks, there are a few tendencies as far as the makeup, the mental makeup, the physical toughness, the character and work ethic. Put another way, Zach, those guys just were determined not to fail. And in the process of being so determined not to fail and prove the doubters wrong, went on to develop as Hall of Fame players.
Well, I guess I'll ask you this off of that. Any players in the top 10 that you kind of think are wired that same way? And who do you have as your top 3 players on your board in order? Is it as simple as the chalk of DeBanza, Peterson, Boozer, or do you have a different order yourself?
Yeah, I think there is a gap after DeBanza Peterson in some order, and that's very close for me. One of the things NBA teams do now, Zach, is kind of tiering guys. So the distance with, you know, the reason to put players in tiers is to remember the distance between players is not always equal, or between picks is not always equal, right? Sometimes it's really close, and then sometimes there's a big gap to the next grouping of players. So teams use that to help them kind of clarify their rankings and also target certain areas as far as, hey, if we get to this spot on the draft board, we'll get one of these guys, or maybe have a look at a couple of these guys if we get here, given our board and our math. That's the way teams do it. So I do think, you know, Boozer's the one for me that is really difficult from a productivity standpoint, off the charts. One of the great freshman years in the history of college basketball, is by far and away the leading stats model analytics guy on with just about every team I've talked to, given his age and productivity. But, you know, there are some concerns about the athleticism, the kind of the floor spacing ability and the defensive ability. So I think two guys I like more than most that I take a long look at, even in that, you know, 3, 4, 5 range, Zach, are Caleb Wilson from North Carolina, who I think goes there, probably number four after Boozer, if the chalk holds. And then I like Darius Acuff Jr. a lot from Arkansas. I think what you want from a lead guard in the NBA today, the ability to create shots for yourself and others at a high level, the composure and feel for the game, the physical, you see the physical strength there with some of the pictures for those of you watching on the VSIN broadcast. There's really a lot to like offensively. Teams will pick at his defense, but my colleague and friend Fran Fraschilla of SiriusXM, I thought, made a great point the other day. He said, look, people tend to overweight college defense. If a guy is smart and tough and cares, and the NBA team focuses on that under the court, you can get a lot better in that regard. But what you can't teach is what Darius Acuff has, the feel, the scoring ability, the passing ability. So I think he has a chance to be a tremendous lead guard, which just about every team in the league could use at this point.
Well, the guard position is really interesting in this draft, because I feel like not only are the guys in the top 10 really good, you also have Bennett Sturts, you also have LeBaron Filon, you have Christian Anderson. There's some really good playmakers in this draft. Does the presence of those guards later in the draft maybe make you think that you should draft one of the bigger players or a wing in the top 10 and hope you get another bite at the apple a little bit later on?
Well, I mean, that certainly applies if you're a team with multiple picks. You know, I think that the danger is, you know, thinking you can trade somewhere. You may be able to, you may not be able to. And as you know, Zach, unlike football, this is not a volume draft. So we have heard, and I think we'll continue to hear a lot about teams who may want to package their picks and move up. Milwaukee, certainly with 10 and 13 now, as a result of the Giannis Antetokounmpo trade to the Heat. We've heard that with OKC, who I think the next step for them is roster consolidation. You saw the deal the other day just with Aaron Wiggins, a solid rotational piece going out just because they can't afford to pay all these guys, Zach, especially as the extensions for Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams kick in. So they need some consolidation. But as you know, it's not like the NFL where you can trade, a couple picks for volume, or you'd want to do that. It's a quality, not quantity draft. And I think teams are really coveting the picks in this year's draft, especially in the upper to mid lottery, because it's a loaded draft. And yes, DeBansa, Peterson and company will get a lot of the attention, as they should. But to your point, there's some really good players, especially from the guard position, in the mid to late lottery, or even potentially available after the lottery.
That's really good to know. I've been wondering if we might see like Mara go in the top 10 with a team thinking that maybe might be able to get back in. But hearing from you and hearing from a GM like yourself that has made these decisions and knows what it takes to trade into the first round, it's definitely something that we will take into mind. So I really appreciate you joining us, Ryan. Hopefully we could talk to you again at some point when the season gets a little bit closer. We are going to be back with Hardwood Handicappers Monday to Friday as the season approaches. So we will definitely have some time to have you on, but appreciate it. Enjoy your draft night.
Thanks, Zach.
Hardwood Handicappers Draft Edition, only on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're back with the Hardwood Handicappers Draft Edition, and as always, We got some great stuff out of Ryan McDonough last segment. This is a guy that joined me throughout the season on the podcast. Hardwood Handicappers was such a great guest, so I really appreciated having him on to, you know, give us some of his insights. This is somebody, like I said, he's actually made these decisions. I'm an armchair quarterback. I can tell teams what they want to do or what they should be doing, but I have no say. He actually had say for the Phoenix Suns, made some great, great draft picks in his time there. So it was really interesting to kind of get his thoughts, but it's kind of time to kind of bring this thing home. We are, you know, 15 minutes away from the start of the 2026 NBA draft, and I haven't even really addressed the elephant in the room yet. Giannis Antetokounmpo was traded to the Miami Heat last night. I did a whole 15 minutes on that over on our YouTube channel, also on Spotify and Apple Music. So if you kind of want to get my thoughts on what that trade meant for Miami, you can head over there and listen a little bit more in depth. But that was a trade that obviously I really liked it for the Heat. I think a lot of people were talking about the lack of depth, what their starting five might look like after that deal. I personally think it's going to be fine. I think that that team is now a contender to win the Eastern Conference. But the other side of that deal, where things are a bit of a nightmare in Milwaukee, it's actually a little bit more relevant as we talk about tonight's NBA draft. Because for the Bucks, while there is definitely some more selling to do, because you acquired a guy like Tyler Hero, you acquired Jaime Jaquez Jr., you have some veterans on your roster, maybe you need to keep moving parts and trying to acquire young assets. But the future really starts tonight, where Milwaukee has number 10 in this draft and number 13 in this draft. And I feel like there's a chance the Bucks try to package those picks and move up. But in an ideal world, I think Milwaukee ends up leaving this draft with Nate Amon, the wing out of Tennessee, who I talked about a little bit earlier. And I think that they are going to want LeBaron Fialon Jr., the guard we talked a little bit about earlier, at number 13. I feel like if you are John Hurst, the decision maker for this Bucks team, you can add a wing, a toolsy wing that can defend, has some promise on the offensive end, can come in and give you some really good minutes at small forward. That's a win. And Fialon is a player that I said it before. There are some great guards in this draft, many guards that are going to go in the top 10, but Fialon is a player that I think is going to go just outside that range and might end up giving you the same production you're going to see out of those players. He is just so good at attacking downhill. He can shoot. He can make plays for others. This is somebody that was the unquestioned engine of Nate Oates' elite offense in Alabama, and I feel like his skill set's going to translate very well over to the NBA. So I think that this Bucks team that has met with Fialon quite a few times, they're going to want him at 13 and Amon. They had a really big group go and look at him in a private workout with Taylor Jenkins joining John Hurst and some of the other front office executives to go watch him play. And there was some talk about Milwaukee potentially making a draft promise to Amon at number 10. So I think those are the two players to watch with Milwaukee. And other than that, if maybe Amon goes a little bit earlier, maybe Karim Lopez, the number one international player in this draft, ends up with the Bucks. But I do think this is a team that is hot for Amon. And kind of the reason I wanted to talk about Amon is because that's one of my bigger plays as we kind of look at my best bets for the 2026 NBA draft. Last week, once those reports came out about Amon, you know, having the private workout with those decision makers in Milwaukee, I jumped on Amon to go under 10.5 on his draft position. And there are a few reasons I like that. It's not just because I think he's going to go 10 to Milwaukee. It's also because I think there's a chance he goes 6 to Brooklyn. But overall, I do think this is a player that's going to go in the top 10. I'm personally not as hot about Amon's game as maybe some front office executives are, but I understand the tools. I understand the urgency to maybe get him in this draft. But that is one of my best bets for this draft. And I do have a few others. A lot of them I have been sitting on for a couple of weeks or months now. The biggest one as we head into draft night, AJ DeBonsa to go number one at plus 135. This is a pick I gave out over at vsin.com, wrote a long story on it back on March 1st. And at the time, available at plus money odds. And I said then, and I believe it now, he gives you the best combination of a very, very high floor with a high ceiling. There are players in this draft that maybe have a higher ceiling, like Darren Peterson. There are players in this draft that I maybe believe are a better total package, like Cameron Boozer, but Devonta is such a pro. He's so well regarded as a leader that I just didn't see the number one pick in this draft being willing to pass on him. And I don't feel that way about Washington now. There's a reason the Wizards moved to minus 2,500 to draft Devonta tonight. It's because he really should end up being the pick. And I did end up hedging that play with Peterson to go number one at plus 415. So in a situation where if one of those two goes one, we will profit. So if you were listening to Hardwood Handicappers throughout the year and you jumped on my draft plays, we did pretty well there. I took Cameron Boozer as soon as the odds came out to go number three because I view him as a great fit in Memphis, an analytic forward front office taking the best player in college basketball analytically last year. Feels like a dream pairing. And a few other picks that I made maybe don't look as great today. Braden Burries, I do think, is at risk of falling out of the top 10. Just a gut feeling, but minus 175 is where I took that. And I took a really small flyer, like 0.1 units, on Darius Acuff Jr. to go number four because personally, I believe he's the number four player in this draft. And if I'm Chicago, a team that is playing in a big market, can use an on-ball guard, I really would have been considering taking Acuff, but it does sound like they're going to take Caleb Wilson. I can't blame them for that. But those are just the plays that I added, you know, a few weeks and a few months back. We do have some picks that I added to the website on Monday. So I already talked about a few of them in the first 10 minutes of this show with who I believe will go 5 through 7 in this draft and Adai Mara to go under 9.5. But those are not the only ones. I have a weird one for you. You know, if you were going to take this, you're just going to be taking it pretty much blindly without knowing much about him. But Jack Cale, a German guard that has now played for KK Mega Basket, also known as Mega Now, that is an NBA talent factory, and it's where Nikola Jokic played his ball in Serbia. Cale is a really interesting combo guard with a lot of potential, and he's a player that I have just outside my top 30 when talking about my favorite prospects in this draft. But I think that that's interesting when looking at this draft because this is a really strange year for the NBA, and things are getting weirder in the NBA draft in general because really good college players that might be going towards the end of the first round are now getting big money to return to college. So towards the end of the first round, some of these front office executives have to decide between a player that might not really be deserving of a first round grade or a little bit more of an unknown. I can see a draft, you know, expert or scout and somebody that has a lot of pull in an organization saying, why not go with Cale? We don't know what he's going to be yet. He might be able to be better than one of these older college prospects or one of these college prospects that, quite frankly, we did not have a first round grade on. So Cale is a player that I think can go in the first round on talent alone, but also a lot of the teams that are drafting towards the end of the first round are not in a position to waste the roster spot or salary space on a younger player that's not going to play for them this season. So Cale's a player that I also view as a draft and stash candidate. So that's somebody that I do think has a chance of sneaking into the first round. I took it at plus 150 yesterday. Right before I hopped on this show, it was plus 175. So you might be able to do a little bit better than I did. The final play, which is one you'd have to look at like prediction markets, I do think Jaden Quaintance might fall out of the first round tonight. That's really tough for me to say. I do live out here in the Valley. I loved watching Quaintance play for ASU, and this is a player that I view as having all NBA defensive potential. He's just a really unique prospect at the center position, can really guard 2 through 5 and sometimes 1 through 5, also a good play finisher. So it's somebody that on talent alone, I would expect him to go in the top 15 or so, but he suffered a torn ACL at Arizona State, only played 4 games at Kentucky because he was dealing with persistent knee swelling. And all of a sudden you're talking about a talented guy that did not receive a green room invite and all of a sudden is at risk of falling out of the first round. But that's really it for me. If I add something, it will be the under on Bennett Sturts to go 17.5. I think that that's a player I'm very high on and front office executives are very high on. But that's all I really have for you here. So best of luck if you're telling me. I hope you enjoyed the show today, but do not go anywhere. The draft coverage continues with Tim Murray and Matt Eumanns on VSiN Primetime Betting the Draft. Picks, prop bets, and reactions all night long. It's all right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And tomorrow, get your betting day started with Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis on VSiN by the Books at 7 a.m. Eastern, followed by a numbers game at 10 a.m. Eastern with Gil Alexander.